Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. And I'm so happy to be able to bring you another incredible podcast while we are all staying home and doing our part over such a difficult time. Today, I have the pleasure of bringing you from his house in Barcelona one of the best EuroLeague coaches, and at the same time, one of the youngest in the league, if not the youngest. And imagine that 10 years ago, he actually won the title when he was only 36 years old. Please welcome to another edition of the 20th anniversary special, the head coach of Zenit St. Petersburg, Xavi Pascual. Coach, welcome to the Crossover. How are you?
Doing good, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good considering the situation.
Yes. Everybody at home, eh?
Yeah. You know, that as I'm reading this and going over all your statistics and everything, and I'm talking about your age so much, I never realized until I actually did some research on you that you were so young.
Thank you.
But
for one side, I'm not happy because it means that I look older, but okay.
No. You've always looked young to me, but I never knew you were that young. I just thought you were one of those lucky ones, you know?
Yes.
I'm thinking that we have to check your passport information to see if you're actually 47.
Yes, thank you.
When you won the EuroLeague in 2010, things changed dramatically, and I love doing these types of interviews with coaches, especially when they're an open book and they're honest, you know, because a lot of players just kind of give the regular phrases and regular things that they say after a game or whatever game.
Mm.
Is there a point where you felt during this place intimidated or out of place when you were younger, going up against coaches at such a young age, guys like Aito, maybe, who is a Barcelona legend, Ivkovic, David Blatt, just to name a few? Did you ever feel like you're out of place or intimidated by other coaches?
It's difficult to think like that. I have great respect for all of them. But of course, I feel part of this history, no? I feel part of one of the greatest seasons, I think, in EuroLeague, because also it was the last one that 3 points line was in 6:25. So I think after that basketball changed a little bit, and it was like explosion basketball in this year. We remember that we played great basketball with the speed and aggressive and in defense, in offense. So I think in this book that one day EuroLeague starts, we are in one beautiful page on this book.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. I didn't even realize that that was the last year that the three-point line was extended.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting the fact that it changed the game. But at the time when they extended the three-point line, you expected the game to change to more of an interior type of play because it gave the big men more room. But it actually was different. It became more of an exterior game where the fours and even the fives were extending the floor more basketball-wise, which was, I think it was an opposite effect of what they were trying to do at the time.
Yes, it was evolution, because I remember that in that period, everybody was saying, what is going on right now with the line, with the extension line? And a lot of coaches, they start to talk about, we will have more space to play, it will be fantastic, because right now, with the line in 6:25, we have not enough space. But in the first 1-2 years was not like that, because what happened is that all the defense tactical defenders became more more conservative, more to pack in the zone and to allow the 3 points line. So it was not that we had more space, we had less space, because we give space outside in the end. After that, year by year, it was evolution, and as you say very well, now it's completely different, because now everybody, all the players, they adjust this situation, and now...
That's an interesting point. I never really thought about the fact that when they extended it, they actually made it more compact by defenses saying, well, shoot from the outside, it's a further shot, it's a lower percentage shot, so to speak. But that's changed, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I usually start these things with your early life, and we'll get there, but I got into something a little bit different. But I want to talk about, real quick, because of the situation that we're all in, It's been very publicly known now, your trip home from St. Petersburg to be with your family.
Yeah.
Some of the things that I've read, I believe, and some of the things it's just so hard for me to believe. Go over that you barely got out of Moscow, you barely got out of St. Petersburg to begin with.
Yes. It was like this because also we have the recommendation for our doctor, and also was like mandatory to do it over there. So when we put one step in the airport, we were with a mask, with gloves, and we didn't take out in all the period because also, you know, you're coming back to your home, and also you know that you left the country perfectly, but you know that in the next 20 hours, you will be exposed. So you try to protect yourself because you know you don't know what is going on, and you know that you don't want to put in risk your family. So we were in extremely security process, and I think everything was okay because I feel perfect.
You went from St. Petersburg to Moscow. You have a flight from Moscow to Madrid. How many people were on those flights?
More or less, St. Petersburg, Moscow was like a normal flight, but because they canceled two flights and they put all the people in the same flight. But after that, Moscow, Madrid was like no more than 20 for sure. And after that, the big surprise for me, because, you know, when you are from Barcelona, you know that in any time you want to go to Madrid or Madrid-Barcelona, it's easy. By AVE, by plane, it's very easy. And it was not any plane to go Madrid-Barcelona. It was a shock for me. Also, when I arrived to Barajas, that was completely, completely empty. It was amazing. Wow. It was a shock.
Were you traveling alone?
No, with my assistant, with Inigo.
With your assistant.
Yes, and after that, in Madrid, he took one car to Logroño, and I took one car to Barcelona. So it was.
And you saw maybe you said 10, 15 cars. It's a 6-hour trip from Madrid to Barcelona, more or less.
Yes, a lot of trucks, but no cars at all. Maximum 20. I didn't account, but.
Right.
But I remember from Madrid to Barcelona, you have to pass Zaragoza. In all Zaragoza round, I didn't find one car. Zero.
Amazing. It's kind of a scary feeling also when you're doing that. And you've also, you were stopped a few times by the police.
Yes. But normally they are doing their job and they were perfect. They were perfect because I was like coming back to my family's house.
Yeah.
And I had to present my passport, my visa work in Russia, and also my tickets. And everybody understood that, okay, that I can do it. I am allowed to do it, this, no? But it was like a film, you know.
Yeah, but when you took out your passport, they saw Xavi Pascual. They just let you go, right?
No.
come on.
No, they know me for sure. They know me, but I had to. Of course, they are making excellent job, and how to say, they must do it, and they check everything that it was correct. I am one citizen more in this country.
Of course. Well, we're happy that you're back and you're with your family and you guys are safe. That's the most important thing right now.
Let me
get down to like where your story now. How is it that you're so young as a coach? Did you play the game as a young player, as a young person?
Yes, I was playing basketball in my town, in my born town, is in Gavà, close to Barcelona, 20 kilometers south. And in the same time, I start to be coach with 16 years old with mini basket. You know, and also I was using this small amount that I was willing to pay my studies because I am engineer and I had to pay my studies. And I start to do like this. My passion was basketball, in the same time studies, like all the coaches more or less. And step by step, I was going up junior teams, so, after that senior teams, like this.
So you're working as a coach at 16, 17, 18 years old and paying for your own schooling.
Yes.
You say that's like most coaches do, but that's not what most coaches do. You understand that, right?
Okay.
Most coaches, Yeah, most coaches, you know, get to a level, they play professional for a little while, and then they start, you know, maybe coaching at 30, 35 years old. I mean, you started coaching at a very young age. You were obviously coaching, what, like young teams?
Yes, and as also, like all of us, we have some people that were important in our lives, no? Like here in my town, I found two or three persons that I am the person that I am because of them.
Who are those people, coach?
One of them, unfortunately, is not with us. It's Salvador Solé, and another two is two brothers, Mercade brothers, that they were very important for me. And after that, when I make one step more, most important person for me in my education was Agustín Cuesta. Agustín Cuesta was ex-player and also assistant of Aito. And after that, of course, it was one moment in the end of my education that when I was assistant with Dusk Ivanovic, it was crucial for me how I learned from him, how I understand everything in professional basketball. And okay, these people, for sure, they make me a better person and better coach.
You spent almost, from my research, you spent like 14 to 15 years in these lower leagues, so to speak. You know, EBA and all these other clubs before you had a break. You were in the farm club of Barcelona in 1995 with Cornella. Mm-hmm. Was there times during those 15 years, because 15 years is a long time, were there times where you thought maybe this wasn't the right track, you weren't getting the break that you wanted, you weren't doing, because, you know, this, I think this speaks to many young coaches out there that are trying to find their way, even in today's world, to get that break. What kept you around for those 15 years fighting and trying to study and get better and better?
You know, it's part of my personality, always to try to be better than the day before. But of course, I was afraid. I was afraid because I had my studies as an engineer. After that, I started to work, and I was afraid to leave my job because I had a really good job, and I was doing everything like parallel during these years. Also, when I was in Cornellà, as you say very well, in 95, that I was assistant of Agustín Cuesta, it was one period that in the same time I was working because I didn't want to leave my job. So
what job did you have outside of basketball?
I was working as an engineer. And I was a technical director in one engineer, so I had a very good job. And after that, step by step, I was continuous like this. You know, I was in Segunda Nacional, that was like four division in Spain, and in the same time I was working like this. After that, I became municipality engineer in one town close to Gavà, Viladecans, and also I was making as a coach. But I was afraid to make this big step to say, okay, from now on I will stop my career as an engineer, that I am winning good money and I have good life, and I will make this step to be a coach, because I was afraid that a lot of coaches, they try to be a professional coach, but it's impossible. And everybody was saying around me, you have to do it. Okay, basketball people, no? You have to do it because you have something special. You will be amazing coach. But for another side, I was thinking, okay, I have not a big name. I am not ex-player. So it's very difficult to become a coach. But it was one moment that I was in the second team of Barcelona. And after that, I met Dusko. And he asked me if I want to be his assistant. For me, it was an amazing, amazing honor to meet him. First of all, I was impressed of him, and I wanted to be with him. And it was the moment to make this big step. So what I have to say for the young coaches is that, okay, you have to put your foot on the floor always, and you have to think every decision, let's say.
But in your situation, it's a difficult decision, but it's a bit easier because you have an education, which is I think, you know, me being an American guy who we've always had to go to college for 4 years and graduate from college and, you know, maintain our grades. I think that's the most important thing that you had. You had a plan B in case the basketball didn't work out, which it obviously... Okay. Obviously, the plan B you didn't need. So Dusko gives you doesn't give you the job. He asks you to work with him because he sees something in you, obviously. Nobody just gets a job because you met somebody. And this is with the time where you say, okay, well, I'm done with my engineering job.
Yes, because in that moment also, Dusko was like my idol, and he was amazing with Baskonia. I was watching all the games of him and was like, it's my dream to work with him. And
right.
and I say yes, of course. And he was crucial for my life after that.
What? How is it you come in from 14, 15 years in EBA and Segunda División and all that? How is it to walk in and have to coach Juan Carlos Navarro? are you a bit intimidated? Are you a bit like? I think at this point you respect him more than he respects you.
Yes. Well, okay. First of all, this is what you say is 100% sure. But it's one guy that always he respects to everybody, and he shows this respect to everybody from head coach until the last guy. More than good player, is amazing person.
Yes.
Juan Carlos is one guy that you cannot find one in our world in basketball that he can say something wrong about him. He's an amazing person, always with respect to everybody. He loves basketball, but also he's an amazing teammate. And always he helps in my job that in all the years that we were together.
So, I mean, I can't imagine what it was like for you to get onto this team here, but in 2008... this comes your big break. And now what you've told me here throughout this interview, these are things that I can't research because I don't know about, but I love to pick them up during the interview. And one of them is that Ivanovic was like an idol to you. He's one of the people that you looked up to. But in 2008, he resigns from the team. He leaves as head coach.
Yes.
And you're asked to take over. Before we talk about what it was like to take over as an interim coach, tell me what it was like leading up to this, especially since you looked so far up to this guy, so much. He was so important to you. I know he just didn't decide to resign one day. Something had to be going on. The staff had to know what was going on, maybe expected it. How does that feel for you as an assistant coach and then being named the head coach? Is it a weird situation for you? Is it strange?
Yeah, super strange, because also I remember very well that moment. It's something that I will never forget, because it was game day. We had to play a first game in top 16 against Malaga with Sergio Scariolo. And I think it was Thursday, 14 February 2008. And I was in the gym. As all the assistants, we are working for the next game, no? So I was preparing, I think I was preparing Valladolid. That was the next opponent. And Zoran Savic came down, it was like 3 o'clock, something like that, comes down to my office and knocked the office. Boop, boop. Hey, Xavi, we have to talk. What happened? No, because it happens is with Dusko, and you have to sit on the bench tonight. It's like, what? it was exactly like that. Okay, of
you
course.
You said nobody knew that this was happening.
No, but okay, it was like a little bit rumors, but not too much, really.
Right.
And also in Barcelona, was not frequently that it happened something like that. Really, really, it was not a clear situation. Okay, maybe in that period I was not reading too much. I don't know. But I was not expecting that it would happen something like that. Okay, of course, Dusko prepared the game all together with the staff, but we had the preparation game before. And we played against Scariolo, and I think we won by 68, 67, something like that. It was my first game. And it was very strange atmosphere in the gym, everything. Everybody was thinking, who is this guy to coach the team in this moment? Okay, it was crazy.
So that's a home game also.
Yeah, home game. Okay, this is why I say I was in the gym working, and because I have my clothes over there, everything. Zoran came and say, okay. In that moment, Zoran was the technical director. And he said to me, okay, we have to speak because tonight you have to sit on the bench. Say, okay.
and were you named at that point interim coach for the rest of the season, or was that still up
no,
in the
okay.
air?
It was one period, like 1 month, something like that, that nobody said nothing. After that, they say that I will be only until the end of the season. But after that, we had a little bit success, because in that moment, to participate in the next EuroLeague season, you had to play the final in Spain. So yeah. And we had semifinals against Juventud Badalona that in that period was amazing. They won the cup and was with Rudy, with Ricky, amazing team. And we had to win with a disadvantage, home disadvantage. And if not, next season we will not participate for the first time in the history in Barcelona, will not participate in the EuroLeague. And we won this semi-final, and it was maybe the most important title that I never won. And and after that, Joan Creus was nominated for the next season technical director. We spoke, and he decided to put confidence with me. And until now.
What's the difference between... I mean, obviously, there's a huge difference between being called as a coach like that in that situation and actually starting your next season from the beginning. I mean, how much? I mean, obviously, it's much more responsibility, but there's much more pressure because now you're in charge of signing players. This is like 15 years of everything you've done beforehand really doesn't prepare you for what you're experiencing right now in Barcelona. I don't think.
Yes, of course. I was first coach a lot of years, but it was until second division. So everything is different in ACB. Mm-hmm. This is the first, but you have this in your back, let's say, because you were the leader of some particular teams, and this is something that helped you for the next challenge. But of course, when you make the substitution as assistant, as a first coach, is difficult. But you know everything. You are inside of the team. You know. Mm-hmm. The procedure of everything, and it's a little bit more easy that when you became a new head coach after one coach goes out. This is more difficult by far, I think. But of course, but of course, when you start one season and all the focus became to you, and as you say very well, when you decide to pick up some players and you decide to leave some players and you start the season, is when you really start to feel that, okay, now I'm here, now all the focus are on me, now I am the main responsible of the team, and you became a really head coach in high level.
You know, for most coaches, it's unfortunate because when the team wins, the team is the champion. When the team loses, it's the coach's fault.
But this is part of it. We have to accept.
Of course, it is.
This is in our NDA, you know. So it's part of us.
It's part of your life. That's the way it is.
Yes.
When did you feel that you were going to get that? You didn't know until you guys signed Cruz as the general manager that you were going to get the job. Did you, throughout the end of that season, when did you actually know that you were coming back the following year, or was it just kind of up in the air?
It was in the summer. I don't remember exactly. It was like the end of June or beginning of July. I don't remember very well that we had one lunch together, and he said, okay, you will continue with us, and you will say, I will put all my confidence on you. Mm-hmm. I trust you. I follow exactly what you did. It was a great job, and now you have to be ready for the next season. But it was hard decision for him because you know, he was brave. He was amazing because, you know, he became head coach. Responsible on basketball in Barcelona, and his first year. Hey, he can go to the market and he can took one great name, and he decided to go with me. So. How to say? I have to say thank you to him to believe in me.
There's a lot of people that probably listen to this podcast that don't know exactly who he is. Chichi Cruz, who is one of the best point guards to ever play the game in Madrid, and it doesn't, knowing him the way I kind of know him, it doesn't surprise me that he was man enough and strong enough to make a decision like that and not worry about the consequences. Because I think you're right. I think in most situations, that new person would come in, would go to the market and find somebody with a little bit more of a bigger name, a little bit more experience than who Xavi Pascual was at that time.
Yes, exactly.
That says a lot about him. What about the difference between from the assistant coach level? The assistant coach level is exactly that. He's an assistant coach, and he has the work, the games, like you said, always working one game ahead of time for the head coach. and you have a more of a personal relationship with the players on the team. How does that relationship change, and how do you make it change when you become the boss now? And because now that relationship has to be different than it was before. How is that?
Okay, sometimes when you are the main assistant coach, you have to be between the head coach and the players to help that this relationship must be as better as possible. So sometimes when player doesn't understand something, you have to go there, you have to put cream, you have to say, you have to speak, you have to help him to understand what is the main reason that the coach says something to you, because he believes in you, or because he wants that you improve this, or because you want that you have to put more attention on this, or more concentration, or whatever, no? So sometimes you have to be like that. When you became a head coach, you have to convince the player in which way you have to go, but sometimes you have to be authoritarian. You have to say, okay, this is like this because must be like this. But but for me, the key of all the coaches is that always all the coaches, we have to have the knowledge to answer any question that the player is doing. This is very important, and to answer with security. And player must feel, okay, here is my coach. If my coach says something like that with this in this way and he speaks like this, it means that, okay, this is true and we have to go like that. So this is the key of all the coaches, because a lot of coaches, when player is asking something, they are like afraid. Okay, you cannot say anything. You cannot ask me because I am the boss and you cannot say. If you react like this, you are losing the confidence of the player, because
of course
player always will react like, okay, this is mandatory, I will do it. But you cannot find a way to convince the player to do it. And this is completely different, because after that, when you are under the stress or when you have some problems, players will react like they think, not like you are mandatory. So it's very important to convince the player to the correct way.
I think that's all the interviews that I've done and all the talking that I've done with coaches. That's one of the most constant things that they tell me, is that you have to be prepared to answer any question that a player has, because the players are in a position nowadays to challenge the coaches a little bit more than maybe they were 20, 30 years ago. And it's interesting that you said that also, because so many people that I've talked to coaching wise have said the same thing. And that's an important thing. Barcelona has so many historic players, you know, Pau Gasol, of course, you have, you know, in Spain, I should say, Marc Gasol. I can go all the way back to Epi, who's, I used to hate Epi, but it was one of, you know, inside of me, he was one of my favorite players, but I hated him because to play against him every day.
Of course.
But I don't think, in my opinion, and I know I've gotten some people saying things about me on Twitter and, you know, and socially and whatever. To me, Juan Carlos Navarro, you've already talked about his persona, the type of person he is. He was the guy who, I mean, he's just the man. He's my type of player. He's the guy that I want on my team all day long, even over these other guys that were incredible historic players in Spain. What was it like, not to coach him as a person, but his work ethic, and how did he become such an incredible player?
Okay, of course, he has natural skills that are amazing. But okay, during these years, I saw his evolution, and it was amazing. On the beginning, first year, he was thinking more to score. You cannot stop him. He was scoring bomba with right, with left, 3 points with one leg, off screens, pick and roll, everything. But he was mainly one scorer. And year by year, he was improving his game. He was improving defensively and offensively, tactical way. How to pass the ball, how to start the creation. Not only because it was one moment that he understood that sometimes he cannot make the assist, the final pass, but he can start the creation. And was something inside of him that, okay, every time they will play trap with me, and okay, Juan Carlos, let's gonna make one pass. It will be not in the assist, but it will be perfect for the team. And it was one big jump that he did in his game. And this is why he became the player that he is. No, of course, he never lost this quality to score. Of course, he never lost this quality to score in the crucial moments, in crunch time, let's say. But it was complete player year by year.
You know, I literally, when you talk about him, I get the chills, you know, because I used to love to watch him play. And when I watched him, and it, just as you're saying, and I told so many people, I said, be careful because he's learning to pass the ball. And when a scorer learns to pass the ball, they become twice as dangerous offensively because their ability to see open people. Now there's no help, you know? Mm-hmm. And I always compared, and I don't want to do that because I'll get in trouble. So we'll move on. I don't want to compare too many people because I don't want to get in trouble.
Yes, it's very difficult. This.
Yeah, I don't want to compare. Juan Carlos to me is number one in Spain. He always will be. I don't know if there'll ever be a player that was as decisive for a team and for a club and for a country as he was. So I just, you know, shout out to him. But let's go back to you now. Your first season was amazing. You finished the regular season top 16, 14-2. You win the fifth and deciding game against Tau Ceramica for a trip to the Final Four. Again, I ask for honesty from coaches because you guys can be honest because you've gotten to this level where you can say anything you essentially want to say. In your wildest dreams, growing up through EBA, through second division, did you ever imagine that it was just a really a bad fourth quarter in the Final Four that kept you from being in the championship game, although you made it to the Final Four? Did you ever imagine that this was going to happen to you?
Look, it's something unbelievable because when you are involved on these moments, you have no time even to stop 1 second to think about that. It's amazing. You are. Yeah. It's like one book that you cannot stop to read, and it's one more page, one more, and nonstop. And you are not stopping to think about that. But I remember in 2016 when my contract with Barcelona finished and they decide to change the coach for the next season. I had some month over there. It was like June until October that I signed with Panathinaikos. And during this period, I realized what you say. Look, you finished with Barcelona, that was your dream club, and that always you were dreaming to be a coach over here. You did it during 8 years and a half. You became the coach to be more years in a row in the history in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. You participate in Final Four, you won one trophy. And when now is the moment that really I realize what I did. But it was amazing. But, you know, when you are over there, when you are involved in your job, always you are thinking in the next step. And you are thinking, you cannot put one eye behind your back. You have to put attention only in the next second, in the next minute, in the next hour, in the next day.
It is amazing that you can actually tell me, and I could actually understand, and I hope people understand that, it's true. You don't have time to think about what's happening. You may have a day or a couple of days during the summertime, you know, after a season, like, is that season you won, you know, you won the Supercopa also, you won the Spanish Coach of the Year by winning the Spanish League. There has to be a moment where you reflect and, man, this is, you know, it's amazing, but you have to keep going. You have to keep getting better. You can't just rest on this. And then at this time, again, I go back to your age. At this time, I believe you're only 36 years old at that time.
Yes, when you
won. So 37, we go into the big year. You've added, this is your second year now as a full-time coach in Barcelona. You added some key players, which is a lot of pressure too. You added Pete Michael on the team, Ricky Rubio, among some other players, but those are the bigger names. Mm-hmm. Is there more pressure on you the next season now that you've gone this far and you've added a couple players? Now there's no going back. You know, there's no, yeah. You can't do worse than you did last year as a coach.
Mm. Okay, everything starts, I remember, I will never forget also. It was summer. We won in that year, in 2009, 2010, we won, as you say, Super Cup, Copa del Rey, mm-hmm. and Euroleague. Mm-hmm. And we lost the final of ACB. We lost the final of ACB against Baskonia. 3-0, we lose 3-1. But it was the first year that Barça won the Euroleague after 2003, and the first time that we won away, because we played in Paris. And I remember in that summer, I went to Menorca, you know, because it's one place that always I'm going. And first day in Menorca, I was having breakfast in one place that I'm always going there to have breakfast, and became to me one guy that from Barcelona, clearly not from Menorca because the language was clear Catalan, and right. He said to me, "Oh, Xavi Pascual, you have to feel shame. How is possible to lose this final fucking season?" and I was like this in shock because a lot of people was coming to me to say good things, but this guy was the first guy that I met in Menorca in my summer, and he came to me. So, what it means? That never is enough. Always something is wrong, and always as a coach, you cannot try to make happy to all the supporters.
Yes.
Some of them they will not like you. You have nothing to do. Some of them they will not appreciate your job. But don't put attention on that. The most important is that you cannot stop. You have to think
if coaches and players were worried about what people thought, they would never be successful.
Yes, but according of your question, it was like, okay, guy.
Not enough.
Yeah. Not enough. You have to continue. So, let's gonna do it. Good job in the summer. You have to sign good players, and that's gonna continue for the next season. So it was that.
Let's not skip over that year because this is the 20th anniversary edition of the crossover. So tell me a little. Let's get a little bit in depth about that season. What kind of atmosphere was around the team after the previous season's results and the fact that you signed a couple of big name players? What was it like to start that season? Was there just a feeling of like this is going to be our year?
Everything I think starts in the previous season because in 2009 we won the ACB league, and was one moment that we start to create a positive atmosphere around the team, around everybody, and we understood the way to win. And after that, we create an excellent team. It was a perfect combination between local players that they were inside of the team, like Roger Grimau, like Victor Sada, Juan Carlos Navarro, and players that they were inside of the team, like Gianluca Basile, Jakalakovic, Fran Vázquez, players like this, and good foreign players that they came, like Pete Michael, Boniface Endon, Terence Morris, Rasen Blorbeck. We create an excellent combination because it was foreign players that they were hungry to win and local players that they were hungry to win. And all together, they create an amazing atmosphere. Every practice was 100%. We had players like that with this mentality. And all the season we played amazing, but also in the practice was amazing all the season. We had the perfect combination, and this is why I think we lost only one game in all the season in EuroLeague. And we did amazing season.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you lost no games in the regular season, 10-0. You lost a game in the top 16. I think it was to
Partizan.
To Partizan, exactly. Yes. Then you lost one game in the playoff to Madrid.
Exactly. Yes.
And you were 18-2 until the Final Four. And of course, we were talking about the championship. So you went 2-0 also in the Final Four. So that was just an amazing record. I looked back at the games, and during that weekend, there's no games that are ever easy. I don't want to make it sound like this was easy. I mean, people get the wrong idea when I say this sometimes. But when you look at a Final Four and you look what you guys did, number one was the semifinal win over Cesca by 10 points. And it was the defense that really won this, not both games actually, but in the Cesca game, you held them to 54 points. At that point, and I'm not sure if it still stands, was the lowest point total in a Final Four in EuroLeague. Mm-hmm. And was there a little bit of a revenge factor from the year before when you lost to Cesca?
Okay, in that game, I remember, first of all, we lost the previous season against them in Berlin, if I am not wrong. It was. And we had this in our mind, and we tried to play good defense, of course. But it was one game that both teams we had, it's the first game in EuroLeague, in Final Four, first game. A lot of times it's difficult to play, and we start nervous, both teams. We couldn't score in the beginning, even playing well or playing bad, both teams were like this, under pressure, And after that, step by step, we became back. I remember Pete Michael, that was one player that helped us a lot in this game to start to feel the game, because, you know, sometimes you need one player to start to score, and after that, for everybody, it's a little bit more easy, you know. And he helped us a lot. And step by step, we were back. After that, Navarro has his moment. But it was, as you say very well, one defensive game. We play excellent defense. In offense, we were normal, but you know, it was enough to play the final.
But the defense wins championships is what most coaches say.
Okay, actually, I'm not 100% sure about that, because
me
now,
neither. Believe
now,
me.
Now it's both. It's the combination. Yeah. But I think you have to be serious in both parts of the court, defensively and offensively.
But you did it in the final also. You held Olympiacos, who, if I remember correctly, was the highest scoring team of the league that season.
Yeah, it was
you
amazing.
You held them to 68 points, I think, in an 18-point win. And then it seemed like the game was never really in doubt. I mean, it's just one of those finals that you look back on, and yes, it does look easy when you look back on it. I know it wasn't at the moment, but an 18-point win in a final against a team like Olympiacos at that time, who was an amazing, amazing roster, is a huge accomplishment for this team.
Yes, we played. I remember this game that really, it was like something inside of me that in semifinals, I remember after we won against Cesca, that I was with Juan Creus after the game drinking something, you know, typical after dinner.
Come on, coach, what were you drinking?
No, wine. Okay,
red wine.
Yeah, good red wine. After you know, after one win, you have to celebrate a little bit. And we were talking. I say, okay, you know, Juan, I have something inside. It's like, today, we didn't show the team that we were playing before during all the season. I hope in the final to be back and to play as we are, as we did all the season, because we need this image, because if not, Olympiacos is an amazing team and we will not win. And he say to me, don't worry, we will find a way and we will do it. Always Juan was one positive guy. That always he was like this. And we did it. Really, in the final, we saw exactly our image, you know, was like this. It was amazing.
One thing I'd like to ask is, after you won the fourth game against Real Madrid and you clinched that berth to the Final Four, and you had lost the previous season in the Final Four, so you have that month in between, you know, before you go to the championship, which was in Paris that year. What did you do differently between that time from the previous year? Were there anything that you saw either in the Final Four or leading up to the Final Four as a coach that you needed to do differently, that you might have done wrong the year before, that you wanted to change if you ever got back there again? Was there anything that changed your not your style, because your coaching style is never going to change, but your attitude towards the Final Four for the players and for yourself and the coaching staff?
Okay, I remember that in the previous year, okay, all the coaches, we are going, it's a topic, but it's true, no? We are going game by game. And in the previous year, I remember that I did preparation game for Cesca, like 1 week and a half before to start the preparation. It was like we were playing ACB games. And only before the previous ACB game, I start to make the preparation, and after that, the week that is Final Four. But for this Final Four in Paris, from the next week, we start to do something. Always we were doing, okay, two first days in the week, we make a preparation game for Final Four, and after that, we make preparation game for ACB. And we were introducing some topics for Final Four. Also to put the mentality of the player, that our mentality must go over there. Also, we have to manage everything. We have to split the time. You have to use the time. So we use more time to make this preparation game for Final Four. It was like, okay, today is Monday. Today we will practice with the EuroLeague balls. And everybody understood that this is for Final Four. And after that, we changed to ACB balls, and everybody started to think in the next game. It was like this, to split the time. And from this moment, I did it every time that I participate in Final Four. But sometimes with success, sometimes not.
Exactly. That's what the Final Four is all about. Yeah. But you're, again, I'm going to go back to this wildest dream thing that we've already talked about. And you've already explained to me you didn't really realize it until between Barcelona and Panathinaikos. But you won a Euroleague championship at 36 years old, the youngest coach to ever do that. When you were coaching and you were an engineer at the same time working, was there ever a thought that you'd be winning a European championship, or was your thought maybe, you know, maybe I'll get a decent job somewhere and coach a low division team and I just love basketball so much? Or did you have that aspiration of winning a EuroLeague title beforehand when you were younger?
I am not one guy who dreams too much, or I am one guy that generally in my life I'm okay, as a coach, I have preparation, like this, like that. But always I am one guy that I put attention in the next step. I am not generally as a personality, you know. But I can say now that I couldn't believe in that moment that I became one professional coach, and also that I will win the EuroLeague. This is 100%. You know, I'm coach because it's something special for me when I have one opponent in front. I have 2 days, 3 days, 4 days preparation game, and I start to watch games, to watch clips, and I start to feel, what can I do? How can I help my players to win? This is something that is inside of me. When I feel, okay, this is the way, and in this way, probably we can win. This is why I'm coach. Not because I'm feeling that, okay, I'm coach because I want to win titles and I want to be famous. No, I'm not coach because of that. I'm coach because I need to feel every day that I am part of the game, I can help my players, I can help my team to win. And after that, to feel this that, okay, this job that we did was good, because tactically, because technically, because everything, mentally, we prepare the players to win. This is my what I have inside of me. This is why I'm coach. And
is that what gives you the satisfaction of being a coach? The gratification of like, you've done this almost for yourself, but you've done it for your players, and the players followed through.
Exactly.
That's an amazingly gratifying feeling. But, you know, we're going to take a little turn here because that was an incredible season. But now I'm going to be like that guy in Menorca at the coffee shop.
You are taller than him, but okay.
Yeah.
I will not complain to you.
No, but the things get tough the following season because the Final Four is actually announced that it's going to be played in Barcelona.
Mm.
And you, I mean, to kind of put it in a quick nutshell, the season was a great season for you guys. You played well throughout the whole season. You even finished 6-0 in the top 16. But is there an added pressure? Number one, it's almost unfair that the season after you win it, it's in your hometown, because we know how hard it is to repeat as champions, number one. And number two is, like I said, is there an added pressure in the locker room between the team with the players, knowing that this year the Final Four is in Barcelona?
Okay, we were ready for that. I don't want to put an excuse, but that season was amazing. It happens, you know, sometimes there are seasons that it happens everything in the opposite way. You don't know why, but we start to lose players by injury, a lot of players, important players. And after that, you know, in the whole system of competition, sometimes you are not lucky. You know, we played against Panathinaikos with home advantage, because Panathinaikos finished, I don't know if they finished fourth and we finished first or something like that. I don't remember exactly. And we played, like, in that moment, we were most probably the two best teams in Europe in that moment, but only one can play in Final Four. We won the first game at home, and in the second game, it was one game that we had advantage, and suddenly in one moment we start to lose. It was two technical fouls. We start to lose the concentration. We lose the opportunity, and after that, poop. Panathinaikos, that was an amazing team. They find a way to win. And after that, you have to go to... to Athens in that moment with Zelko, with this amazing roster, and you have to win over there. And also Juan Carlos was injured in the second game, so okay, you know, everything was opposite. You know, we have to fight all the time against difficult moments, but sometimes it's like this. So it's not about excuses. Sometimes it's like this. We tried to win over there, and we didn't. And after that, Panathinaikos became the new championship in the EuroLeague. It was one moment that I really feel that the team who passed this playoff had great opportunities to win the trophy.
That was a crazy year because Maccabi, Montepaschi, and you guys, of course, know Panathinaikos won. Each team had home court, did not have home court advantage, lost the first game, and then won the next three.
Yes.
And it was a very strange year for EuroLeague because it's not very rare. I think it's 80-something percent that the home team in the playoff usually goes to the Final Four.
Exactly.
And that was a year where three teams in a row won in game four. And all of them were teams that did not have the home team. How hard is it as a coach, as a player, to watch the Final Four being played on your home court you're not playing?
Okay, in that moment, it was very difficult. Now it's a little bit different because now, you know, you understand more, you have more experience, you know everything, you know, how to say, you have more balance inside of you to understand how it's going on, how it's going this your job, how is going the EuroLeague, how difficult is everything, to understand really if you did a good job or not, even winning, even losing, because sometimes people is thinking in one way, but inside of you, you try to be honest on yourself, if you did a good job, bad job, if you can do something different or not. So it's clear from my point of view that now it's more easy to understand, but in that moment I remember that was difficult. Also, we won ACB, but we didn't play the Final Four, and it was like we feel empty, all of us.
So you didn't go to you didn't go back to Mallorca to see that guy, did you?
No,
because I can't imagine what he would say to you after that.
Okay, you know, in that moment I didn't need anyone to say anything to me. I was punished myself all the time. So.
Yeah, I could imagine. You know. And of course, you can say this to the guy in Menorca if you want to. I wrote this down. You take the team to the playoffs in nine seasons, all right, that you're with the club. You went to the Final Four five of those seasons. You win one championship. You won three ACB championships. You have two Super Cups, two Spanish Cups. You're four times named Coach of the Year. Your overall record in the EuroLeague over the years is 206 wins, 83 losses. And it comes to an end in Barcelona. Is it a fact that you've run your course, your time has run your course at that place, that the people aren't happy? Is it just over, the relationship? What happens to break? Because your success is without a question. You've been successful in this club for over 9 years. Mm-hmm. And you've dedicated your life to this club, so to speak. How hard is it to break that relationship, and how does it happen?
You know, when you became a coach, you know that you are more close to be out of one team because you know nobody will stay all his life in one team. So now with the point of view after 4 years, I think everything finished when it has to finish. So it was okay. It was a good time. I give my best. It was my best years as a person, as a man, as a professional, as a coach, as a everything. I feel that I give my 100% and more than 100%. I'm finished, so I have to say thank you to everybody for this period. And nothing more. Now I feel like this. I feel part of the history of Barcelona, but also my life, my career is going up. After that, I feel one part in Panathinaikos, now in Zenit, and we'll see my next step. So, you know, when you finish in your club, let's say in a club like Barcelona, that all my life was close to Barcelona, you really became a really head coach. I remember one time that with Ettore, that we had one conversation, and he said to me, okay, now in Barcelona, everything is perfect to you, but you will really feel a great head coach when when you will leave your country and you will go to another country and you will win something. In that moment, you really will feel, I am a great coach. And really, he was right. I remember his what he said to me, because Ettore, for me, it's an amazing guy. Also, I listen a lot. Ettore, Zelko, always a lot. No? And I remember when I won the trophy, my first trophy in Panathinaikos in Athens, and I remember what he said to me, and he was right. You feel really coach when you left your country and you have success. This is something special.
How was that to leave your country? Because you spent, because now we're talking about Panathinaikos, you spent so much time in not only in your country, but in Barcelona, in your home. Mm-hmm. You know, you really didn't even leave your home.
Never.
Where you know, some people might be from Madrid and coach in Barcelona or coach in Malaga or coach wherever. You never even left home. Now you're in Panathinaikos. And that's a pressure. I mean, we all know, but I love Panathinaikos. I love the fans. I love the people. They make you feel like a family. But you know, as a coach, your time is very limited in a team like Panathinaikos.
I was not thinking like that, but for sure it was my first experience abroad and was a shock to leave my house. So it was like 48 hours to decide and poop, yes, no, yes, okay, let's go. So you have no time. And it was one of the greatest experiences ever. As you say very well, in Panathinaikos, fans are amazing. I feel like family. I was working with an excellent atmosphere over there. We had success. It was an amazing time. But, you know, as always, one day everything finished. But I had an amazing experience. I have amazing good remembers and good friends now over there. So great opportunity.
Yeah, you won two championships, the league titles in the Greek League. You won the Greek Cup. You're named two-time coach of the year also in Greece. You know, like you said, you went back to those words that Ettore told you, and that was the gratifying feeling. But what I want to know is my favorite question to anybody who's been involved with Olympiakos or Panathinaikos. What do you remember, first of all, your first Greek derby, first at Owaka, and then second at Peace and Friendship Stadium against Olympiakos? What, I mean, these games are just, there's nothing like them.
No, nothing like that.
Also, you have Barcelona, Madrid, no, you have all these other, nothing.
Yeah, nothing. It's completely different.
What's that experience?
It's amazing. First of all, because it's like the previous days, no one is not thinking about this game. So everybody was stopping you in the street, in one coffee, whatever. They were thinking only in this game. And it was like, all Athens is like paralyzed when it's Panathinaikos Olympiakos game. And after that, you know, I remember the previous days before my first game, I was asking where the fans of Olympiakos will be. And they say to me, what? Well, we have forbidden. when you are fan of Pana, you cannot go to Olympiakos Stadium. And if you are fan of Olympiakos, you cannot go to Pana. I say, yes. Because here, you know, always we had a different mentality. I say, okay, I start to understand something. And after that, the atmosphere was amazing. Was in Oaxaca. And you know, it was when I became coach of Pana in the previous game, Olympiakos beat Pana by 25. So everybody was like, okay, what is going on right now?
And yeah, so that's even worse after a game like that.
That was an amazing moment. Also, you know, Olympiakos had an amazing coach, that is Coach Sferopoulos, that is one of the best coaches in Europe by far. And was every game was amazing battle between both, and tactically and physically and everything. Was one of the greatest moments ever as a coach.
One of my first interviews that I did on this crossover podcast was with your point guard at the time, Nick Kolatis, who's, again, not only one of my favorite people, but one of my favorite players in the league. Mm-hmm. And something happened that day where the referees came into town to talk to you guys, and I was there probably about an hour and a half early to meet with Nick. And you allowed me to sit in and watch practice, which, of course, I will always appreciate. I was was interested in the way that you coached. And it was the first time I've ever watched you run a practice. I've seen a lot of coaches run a practice. You let your assistants do that. They ran that practice while you just kind of maintained an eye on everything that was happening, and you interjected when you felt like there's most needed. Was that just like the day that I was there, or is that your coaching style, that you kind of give it to your assistants and give them the responsibility and you sit back and watch? Is that your style?
Yes, it's my style. Yes, they have his responsibility. It depends of the day of the week. They are making one kind of job or another one, but they have one responsibility of defense, one in offense, also one in for scouting, and after that I am over everybody to decide everything. Mm-hmm. But I like and I believe in teamwork. This is the most important for me, to be all together in the same page and to involve everybody in this kind of job.
I think that it was one of the more, not impressive things that I've seen, but I felt as though as assistant coaches, they were getting the real experience. You know, so many times you see an assistant coach that sits there and kind of draws up the practice, does everything beforehand, but then during the practice is just kind of there to help around. But it seems like you're giving these younger guys, or these guys that are assistant coaches, the experience of actually coaching a team. So if they ever get this opportunity, they're almost prepared for it than maybe some other assistant coaches would be.
Yes, I feel exactly like this, and it happens in Spain that Agustín Julve became coach, also José María Berrocal. My two assistant coaches in Greece, they are ready. Now also Yorgos Boboras was head coach in Panathinaikos after Pedulakis was out. I really believe in this. I believe that it's something that I have inside of me, because, you know, Agustín Cuesta helps to me to be a coach. Also, Dusko helps to me to be a coach. And I want to do exactly the same. I want to help all the assistants to be a coach, if really they want to be like this. But aside of this, also, I believe that this is the only way to work right now in the highest level. You have to involve all the assistants in all the situations, in all the topics that you need, because you need help. You cannot do it everything alone.
So you have a couple playoff appearances in the EuroLeague, but never get further than that in Greece. You won a couple championships, but strictly talk about the EuroLeague. How difficult is, because I won one EuroLeague championship in my life, lost another one, and you always feel like you never know when you're going to get that chance again. And even though you've been there so many times, there's, every time you go there, you haven't been able to capture that title again. Does it make you appreciate that first one, or does it make you think that I wish I didn't have so much success so early? you understand what I mean? It's a difficult question to ask anybody. But I felt like that sometimes, like, man, I wish I might have won these at the end of my career or some other time, you know? I don't know how exactly to ask that question, but do you know what I mean?
Yes. Always I'm thinking that, as I said before, I'm thinking always in the next step, and I want more. I cannot stop. Mm-hmm. I cannot stop to try to be better than the day before. And this is something that when you have this mentality, you are thinking in the next game, and after that you are thinking in the next trophy, and after that you are thinking in the next step, and you cannot stop. It's part of my personality. So talking about this, it's like never is too soon to win something, and right. always you can manage everything. And in the highest level, the most important is not only to manage the losers, and you have to manage the wins also. It's very important to manage win by win, because all the weeks are different. After to win one game is one thing. If you became after to lose one game, is different. You have to manage. You have to put the players in the correct position, in the correct mentality for the next game, and always is like this.
Mm. Now you were just talking off air a little bit about St. Petersburg, about Zenit, and where you are now. Just to, you know, not to get too deep into it, because you really just started there before this all happened. I mean, you don't really have much time to talk about it. But one question I was thinking about was kind of what I asked you before about Dusko, when you took over for him. This time, You were called by a team, I'm assuming, who was not doing very well, in, either in the VTB league or in EuroLeague. But they were being coached by Juan Plaza, who's, I'm assuming, is you know each other very well. Mm-hmm. And through being Spanish coaches, and I don't know what your friendship is, what your relationship is, but I'm sure you know each other. The question I want to repeat is, not only do you go to Russia to take the place of a coach, but you go to Russia to take a place of somebody that you know very well. Is it, and he's from your own country. Is that difficult? Is there a phone call between you guys where you talk to each other and you know what's happening? How does that happen?
No, I have a big respect for him. We played a lot of times as our opponents. Mm-hmm. But okay, in these situations, is how to say, you know, it's not about this, I think. But it means that it's very difficult because you know that the previous coach is a great coach like Joan, mm-hmm. and you have to be in front of the team and you have to help the team in another way, let's say. So it's the first thing that you have to think that, okay, if with Coach Plaza, that is an excellent coach, team was not going well.
Yes.
What can I do? No, this is the first question that you have to do.
Right.
But after that, you realize that a lot of times it's not a matter if the coach is good or is bad. It's a matter that sometimes you don't know why. It's chemistry. Team is going down for any reasons, and it doesn't mean that the coach is not great. All the coaches in Europe, we have some of us we have success, but also some of us we had bad seasons, and it doesn't mean that the coach is not excellent coach. It means that right. some seasons, you know, everything is wrong. You don't know why, but everything is wrong. So I feel that it was my moment because I had some possibilities, but I never feel before that it was, okay, let's go there because you will do a great job. No, I feel that it was my moment. It was here. And this is why I say yes. It's something like between intuition and knowledge and something like this. And mm-hmm. I decide to go. And I'm very happy. It was over there like 47 days, something like that.
Right.
And I realized that it's one place that you can do your job, you can work well. I had one team that the guys, they were excellent guys, workers. Okay, I had excellent time, and I feel again coached that after 1 year without to do my job, always watching games in television, I was like a little bit tired. I need to feel again this, to have my whistle in, you know, with me and to work again.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things to talk about with coaches or even with a player. It's the same thing because we are like, as athletes or as coaches, you're on a constant alarm clock. You know, every moment, everything is structured. You have to be at this time, at practice at this time, the bus at this time, the plane at this time. And when that's all taken away, not taken away, but because you weren't coaching, the day becomes extremely long, doesn't it? And what do you do when you're not coaching? You know?
It's amazing. It's an excellent question because, you know, after Panathinaikos, to be honest, it's a little bit personal answer, but I finished with them 22 December, something like that, 25th mm-hmm. December. So, you know, I finished my things like this, like that, and I went back to Barcelona. And I passed Christmas, you know, Christmas and Reyes, you know, and after that, it was one Monday, I wake up in the morning after everything and I say, what the fuck? What to do right now? What I have to do with my time right now? So, and it was 1 week that I was really upset like this, like that, because I didn't know what to do with my time. Also, all my friends, they were working between right. Monday and Friday, so what to do right now? And it was 1 week, second week, third week. It was like one month that I was watching games in television and nothing more. And it was okay. But after that, I realized that I am one guy that I need to use my agenda because all my life I'm using agenda. So when I start to write in my agenda my personal things, let's say I will wake up at 7 o'clock, I will watch one video, I will watch one player that like this, and after that I will run, and after that I will do this, after that I will do that. When I start to use my agenda for my personal life, let's say, I became a person again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we are persons that all the time we are watching the... We are watching the time, let's say.
Yeah.
We
have robots.
To do this. Yes, exactly. But exactly. But now, you know, you understand. So it was like one period that I was like out, because mm-hmm. it was, as you asked very well, what to do with my time.
Yeah.
But after that, when I start to organize my time, I became better and better and better.
You became that robot again, because you, it really is amazing, you know, because I remember when I retired how difficult it was to figure out what to do every day, because the day when you don't have that schedule, the day seems so long.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I'm going to finish up with that was a personal thing, but I'm going to finish up with some other little small personal questions here.
Yes, of course.
You're obviously your top EuroLeague moment's going to be winning the championship, but my question was the top three best EuroLeague moments of your career. We already know that the title is obviously one of them. Are there two other ones, or just another one that you remember being such an important... and it could be a win, it could be a loss, it could be something where you learned. It doesn't have to be a title, obviously, but, you know, some of your best moments.
Mm-hmm. Okay, of course, as you say before, is when in Paris we won the trophy, this is obviously, but I remember my first playoff with Baskonia that you remember before, when we qualified for the first time to Final Four.
That was in the fifth game.
Yes, in the fifth game. It was something also amazing, because it was my first time and it was like trophy. Because, you know, in that moment, okay, in all the moments, but in that moment, Barcelona didn't went to Final Four. I think the last time was in Praga.
2003, I think, was the last time.
No, 2003, we won the trophy in Barcelona.
2003 was... There was the last time they were in the final. Yes.
Yes, but in Final Four, I think it was Praga last time.
Right.
I think it was 2005, I think, or something like that. So it was a long period without to go to Final Four, and I feel extremely happy in that moment that we find a way to go to Final Four again.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I feel something special. A lot of times when I played with my idols, coaches, let's say with Escariolo, with Messina, with Obradovic, with Aito, with you know, with this kind of coaches, it was something special that I cannot explain with words. Let's say it was amazing every time that I was playing with one idol that I had before. You know, so
yeah, as a player, I think this is, we're cursed with the things that, as an ex-player, I remember a lot of the losses more so than I do the wins, you know?
Yes, yes,
when I look back on my past, unfortunately, the bad games, the ones where I played bad, or the ones that we didn't win, or the titles that I lost, number one, is that the same for a coach? And number two, I guess the question would be, is there any game or games that you would go back in your life and say, man, I wish I could do that one game again, because I would have done this better, or I maybe made this mistake in this game and we could have won that game if I did this? Is there any way that a coach feels that way?
Absolutely, it's like this, because when I think it's a matter of when you are a coach or when you are a player, that usually you were winning things, you remember more the losses. This is 100%. I think it's like this. And if you are a winner, you remember more the losses. And I'm exactly in the same page. So, okay, if I have to be back, always I have in my mind this playoff that we play against Panathinaikos, as you say before, when the Final Four was in Barcelona, the second game at home.
Right.
And also the second game at home against Madrid with Panathinaikos, that we won the first one and we lost the second one, and after that it was with Panathinaikos, and after that Madrid became the championship
Madrid, that was
for Final Four.
That was the game two of the playoff where you guys won by 28.
The first one was amazing, and the second one we lost. These two games always I had inside of me that okay, we had to do something different. But after that it's difficult to know what you did wrong or what you did well, but of course at least I would like to be back and to play again this game for sure.
Right. Hey, look, you know, as we've discussed many times throughout this podcast, you're 47. And you're 47 right now. You're still young in this world, and especially in this business, you're extremely young. When you look at some of the coaches and their legacy and the time that they spend, you have another 20 to 25 years of coaching that you can accomplish if you want to. This is a tough life. It's especially difficult for families, for children, moving from one place to another. Is maybe 20 more years of coaching a curse, or is it a blessing that you still have this much time to go?
This is a good question. It's an excellent question, because the other day, you know, now that all of us, we are at home, sometimes we are making video chats, all of us. I did one video chat with my friends, and they say, Xavi, what do you think? How many years you think that you will stay? And really, I don't know. But I know something. If one day I will feel that I have not motivation to do something, I will not do it. And this is the most important. I don't know if this will keep, I will keep this inside of me 20 years more, 25 or 10, I don't know. But I will understand immediately. And this is why I was out one year right now, because I have to feel that this is my place. I have to feel this motivation. I have to feel like this to do my job. So now I feel again this in Zenit. I'm very happy to be there. And this is something that make me, it's part of my life. I'm living 24 hours thinking of basketball. So I don't know if I can do anything else right now.
the toughest thing about that question, I think, is family. You have family also, obviously. You have a wife and one child?
One daughter, yes.
So that makes it even more difficult, you know, because as we spoke about earlier in this conversation, you were lucky to be 9 years or 10 years in Barcelona. That's a fortunate thing in the coaching industry, to be in the same place for so many years. And it's hard to find that. So that's what makes being so young a little bit of a curse. You have a young daughter to worry about. You have a family to worry about. And going from one place to another makes it more difficult. But hey, listen, Coach, this was way more of a better conversation than I expected from you. Your English is amazing. I know you were worried about your English before. Your English has got even better as we went on. But I just want to say, number one, thank you so much for taking your time out of, not so much your busy day these days, because none of us are really busy, but take your time to be here with me and my listeners in the crossover. I just want to wish you the best of luck over the next couple of weeks, months, and yeah, I've had a long, successful coaching career, and no matter where you are, I just want to thank you for
thank
being
you
our
very
guest
much.
Today. And man, you were amazing. You've won another fan here. I hope you've won a lot more on this podcast.
thank you very much for you, how you did everything, and it was a great honor to be here with you. And I wish you all the best. First of all, healthy. And all the success as possible. You had success for everything, but okay, more.
Yeah, well,
always is okay.
You know, we always have success. Nowadays with Instagram and all that other stuff, we have success for what we want to. No one sees the bad stuff, which is good.
yes, this is good.
Coach, thanks a lot, and hopefully we'll see you on the court here soon in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode, and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover, or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.